From executive producer Isaac Saul, this is Tangle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Tangle Podcast, a place where you get views from across the political spectrum, some independent thinking, and this week, a little bit of our take. More on that later. I am your host for today, John Law. Isaac is currently out of the country and he'll be returning next week, so I will be taking over podcasting duties until he returns. Today, we are going to be talking about the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. We're also going to catch you up on a few things that we missed while we were gone last week. Before we get started, we do have a very special announcement. We are excited to reveal our final guest for the upcoming live event in New York City at City Winery on April 17th. Our very own Isaac Saul will be moderating a discussion about the 2024 election with Josh Hammer from Newsweek, Camille Foster from the Fifth Column, and Catherine Rampel from the Washington Post. General admission tickets have already sold out, and there are a very limited number of VIP tickets available. So if you haven't gotten your tickets already, I highly, highly encourage you to get VIP tickets. There's an exclusive post-show group discussion with Isaac. You'll get some Tangle merch, and these are going to be the best seats in the house. You'll want to be up front and close for this discussion. So head on over to the link in the description down below while there's still tickets available, and we'll see you there. We were off last week getting a little bit of R&R, so here are some of the stories that we missed while we were gone. First up, the International Court of Justice called on Israel to allow unimpeded humanitarian aid into Gaza. Separately, Israel said it intercepted an Iranian weapons shipment on its way to the West Bank. Number two, the House Oversight Committee invited President Biden to testify in their impeachment inquiry on April 16th. Number three, Sam Bankman-Fried, the founder of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX, was sentenced to 25 years in prison for securities fraud. Number four, former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman, who ran as Al Gore's running mate in 2000, died at the age of 82. Separately, Representative Annie Custer said she will retire after six terms in the House. And number five, a federal appeals court said a requirement for Pennsylvania voters to put accurate handwritten dates on their mail-in ballot envelopes does not violate a civil rights law. Separately, South Carolina's 2024 congressional map will remain as drawn after a lower court rejected it for unconstitutional racial gerrymandering. All right, that's it for some of the news we missed last week, and now we're moving on to today's quick hits. First up, the Florida Supreme Court ruled on Monday that the state constitution's privacy protections do not extend to abortion, effectively allowing the state to ban abortions after 6 weeks. However, the court also ruled that voters can cast ballots on the proposed constitutional amendment that would guarantee the right to abortion before viability, usually around 24 weeks. Number two, seven workers from the World Central Kitchen were killed in Gaza by an Israeli airstrike that hit their vehicles while they were traveling through a deconflicted zone to deliver aid. The World Central Kitchen said it is immediately halting its operations in Gaza. Number three, Israeli forces withdrew from Gaza City's Al-Shifa Hospital after a two-week raid. Israeli officials called the operation a victory and said no civilians inside the hospital were harmed, while the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry said there was evidence of Israeli forces harming medical workers and journalists in and around the hospital. Separately, an airstrike on the Iranian consulate in Syria killed at least seven Iranian military officers, including two senior commanders. Iran accused Israel of carrying out attacks, but Israel has neither confirmed nor denied responsibility. Number four, Donald Trump secured a $175 million bond to guarantee his civil fraud judgment, preventing authorities from seizing his assets to cover his liability as he appeals two rulings against him in New York. And number five, U.S. traffic deaths fell 3.6% in 2023, the second straight year that fatalities decreased, even as Americans drove 67.5 billion more miles last year than the previous year.
This morning, a stunning bridge collapse at the port of Baltimore.
The entire Key Bridge in the harbor.
The Francis Scott Key Bridge plunging into the water overnight after it was hit by a cargo container ship. The bridge is normally a major artery spanning the Patapsco River. And though the collapse happened in the early morning hours, 1:30 a.m., video shows cars crossing moments before the ship hits. The traffic then paused, but vehicles were still on the bridge as it then crumbled into the water.
We begin here in Baltimore, where Maryland police say they have recovered the bodies of two of the construction workers after the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Divers are searching for the remains of four other victims. Meanwhile, the Navy says it is sending barges outfitted with heavy lift cranes to help clear the channel. The port of Baltimore remains closed indefinitely.
On Tuesday, March 26th, a cargo ship lost power as it was leaving the port of Baltimore and collided with Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing a portion of it to collapse. The collision killed two construction workers on the bridge, while four others are missing and presumed dead, and halted vessel traffic in and out of the port of Baltimore. The operators of the ship, named the Dolly, issued a mayday call moments before impact, allowing law enforcement to stop traffic from entering the bridge but failing to prevent the crash. Eight construction workers were on the bridge when it collapsed, and two were rescued shortly after. Alejandro Hernandez Fuentes, 35, and Dorleon Roniel Castillo Cabrera, 26, are the two victims who have been identified so far. The search for additional victims is temporarily paused as officials work to clear debris around the crash site. No one on the Dolly was injured, though the 22-member Indian crew is stuck aboard with necessary provisions until the wreckage is cleared. The Dolly, which registered in Singapore, was departing Baltimore for Sri Lanka with 4,700 shipping containers and carried 1.5 million gallons of fuel and lubricant oil for its voyage. The ship is a member of a new class of larger vessels that have grown increasingly popular after locks in the Panama Canal were expanded in 2016 to accommodate larger ships. Since then, the Port of Baltimore has installed new cranes capable of handling these larger container ships and dredged its harbor to the 50-foot depth needed to fit them, making it one of the only three East Coast ports capable of handling such vessels. Baltimore's port, one of the busiest in the U.S., remains closed. The port handles the largest volume of automobile and light truck shipping in the country, supporting 15,300 jobs directly and an additional 140,000 related to port activities. The Francis Scott Key Bridge spanned 1.6 miles over the Patapsco River and carried about 35 million vehicles annually. It was last inspected in June of 2023 and was rated in fair condition, but some experts have blamed its lack of pier protection as an exacerbating factor in its collapse. Others have suggested that the bridge could not have endured a direct impact from such a massive ship, even with added structural protections. Billions of dollars in liability claims are expected from the various stakeholders in the collision, with some estimates pegging the total damages to $3 billion. On the day of the incident, President Joe Biden said the government would pay to rebuild the bridge, though only $60 million is immediately available from an emergency fund held by the Federal Highway Administration. "It's my intention that the federal government will pay the entire cost of reconstructing that bridge," Biden said. "We still don't fully know the condition of the portions of the bridge that are still standing or of the infrastructure that is below the surface of the water," Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said. "So rebuilding will not be quick or easy or cheap, but we will get it done." Today, we're going to examine arguments about the factors that led to the crash and its aftermath with perspectives from the left and the right. Then the Tangle staff will weigh in with our take.
We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
First off, let's start with where commentators agree. Both sides say that federal and state officials will need to work together and cut red tape to ensure a timely rebuild. Most reject the narrative that policies derived from DEI initiatives played any role in the disaster. Finally, the left and the right commend the fast response of local officials and law enforcement during the incident, crediting them with saving lives. Now we'll move to what the left is saying. The left thinks the rebuilding efforts will be an opportunity for political differences to be set aside in pursuit of a common goal. Some implore Biden to cut red tape to expedite the rebuilding process. Others criticized some of the rhetoric from the right about immigration in the aftermath of the crisis. The Washington Post editorial board called the disaster a test for American leadership. At a time when the nation seems even more divided and the country's political institutions are mired in disagreement and indecision, this tragedy can't get caught up in partisan sniping. It's time to put aside differences, to rebuild, and to tap into what is still the United States' greatest strength, its deep reservoir of native optimism, the board wrote. Crews must now remove the bridge debris from the waterway. That will take time and special equipment. The focus will then turn to rebuilding the roughly mile-long section of the bridge that was destroyed, perhaps even improving on previous structure for safety and throughput. This is a moment for national unity, to ask how to help the families waiting to hear what happened to their loved ones and the first responders braving frigid waters, and to be ready to help rebuild. Almost a year ago, a bridge on Interstate 95 collapsed outside of Philadelphia after a freak accident in which a truck carrying gasoline lost control and caught fire. But as the flames in that tragedy were brought under control, political leaders, union leaders, and engineers came together and reopened part of that highway in an incredible 12 days. In Bloomberg, Matthew Iglesias wrote, "In Baltimore, Biden can show how to build back faster. A good way to start laying the groundwork would be to insist that a years-long planning process is not acceptable. This is, after all, a bridge that's been there since 1977. Engineers know its starting point. They know its end point. They know how tall it has to be for ships to pass under it. They know which roads it connects to. In other words, a lot of planning has already been done. There's no need to start from scratch," Iglesias said. "We live in a world that inevitably requires trade-offs. The contribution that only a politician can deliver to the planning process is to insist that it be done quickly. Infrastructure veterans forecasting a years-long construction process are offering realistic estimates based on the normal political conditions facing projects of this scale. Political leadership would mean trying to convince both the state of Maryland and the White House that those conditions are not acceptable," Iglesias wrote. "Neither Biden nor Buttigieg can let the rebuilding of the bridge itself be business as usual. And if they succeed in building back faster, maybe it can be a template, not just for how to respond to a transportation crisis, but for how to execute on public projects and help restore public confidence in government." In MSNBC, Alicia Menendez said, "The bridge will be rebuilt by immigrants, like America itself." Rebuilding Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge will require an all-hands-on-deck effort. The enormous undertaking will require all levels of government to work together to reconnect communities and clear a path for ships to enter the port of Baltimore. If done right, it will show what good government can do, Menendez wrote. But it's also essential to recognize the people who will do the heavy lifting in this effort. Local construction workers, many of them immigrants, will put things back together piece by piece. That economic reality, immigrants making America great, is in stark contrast with what is being peddled in the right-wing echo chamber. Just hours after the bridge collapse, Fox Business host Maria Bartiromo tried to connect the tragedy to President Joe Biden's handling of immigration at the U.S.-Mexico border, Menendez said. "These performative gimmicks fly in the face of the truth and rob victims of their humanity. They are also a dangerous distraction in the aftermath of a crisis that demands clear and steady leadership." All right, that is it for what the left is saying, which brings us to what the right is saying. The right worries that the recovery from the crash will be impacted by the same problems that have hindered other U.S. infrastructure projects. Some say the rebuilding process doesn't have to be as expensive as Biden is making it out to be. Others highlight laws that could impede an expedited rebuild. In National Review, John Fund argued, "The bridge collapse shows we must reform how we build. It is eye-opening to see progressives who have put up with such delays for decades suddenly so eager to sweep them away in the wake of the Baltimore disaster," Fund wrote. President Biden may indeed waive some environmental impact rules in order to speed up the construction of the new Baltimore Bridge. But the real question is, why isn't this done more often with ordinary projects, which now drag on forever? Why can't the U.S. have nice, plentiful infrastructure? California's high-speed train project, which has been in the works for 20 years and counting, is over budget by $100 billion and will likely never be finished. Last month, the final environmental impact statement for the rebuilding of Union Station in Washington, D.C. was released after 9 years of work, Fund noted. One of the major causes of the problem is that unions like green laws such as NEPA, As development slows down, inflated labor contracts can last longer, and lawyers from all sides can reap huge fees. Let's hope the Key Bridge disaster focuses the country's attention on the need for us to build things, something we used to excel in. In the Daily Signal, David Ditch explored how to repair the Key Bridge without breaking the bank. President Joe Biden has said that the federal government would foot the entire bill for rebuilding the bridge and demanded that Congress make it happen. While the collapse came as a surprise, nobody should be surprised that Biden's immediate response was to call for more federal spending. Since taking office, Biden has signed trillions of dollars of spending increases into law and imposed more than $700 billion of additional costs through administrative decisions, Ditch said. Fortunately, it's possible for Washington to help Maryland rebuild the bridge without driving the nation deeper into debt. First, all officials must be clear that the cost of rebuilding should mostly or entirely fall on the owners and operators of the ship, even if the incident was purely accidental. While litigation on such an important matter could take time to resolve, taxpayers shouldn't be responsible for the cost of a privately caused disaster. Second, there's no need for Congress to authorize new funding to begin the process of clearing the channel and rebuilding the bridge. In 2021, Congress passed a five-year $1.2 trillion infrastructure package, the largest portion of which is devoted to roads and bridges. Rather than simply adding to the long-term debt, Congress has many options to repurpose funds from the 2021 bill. In Reason, Eric Boehm wrote about the obscure protectionist law that will slow cleanup of the Baltimore Bridge disaster. Clearly, there's every reason to make sure the port can be reopened as quickly as possible. Buttigieg acknowledged as much on Wednesday and said the White House had given a clear directive to tear down any barriers, bureaucratic as well as financial. But Buttigieg stopped short of naming any specific federal regulations that might be waived to speed along the recovery efforts in Baltimore. Here's one that should go right at the top of the list. The Foreign Dredge Act of 1906, Boehm said. The Foreign Dredge Act drives up shipping prices to places like Puerto Rico and Hawaii, adds traffic to American highways, and leaves sizable parts of the country without access to natural gas. Like the Jones Act, the Foreign Dredge Act is a purely protectionist law that forbids foreign-built dredges, vessels built to remove debris from waterways and to deepen and widen shipping channels, from operating in the U.S. Any foreign dredge caught doing work in American waters is subject to immediate forfeiture, Boehm wrote. Waiving the Foreign Dredge Act to now might help in some small way. Perhaps better dredges can be brought in from Canada or somewhere else nearby. But the collapse of the Key Bridge is a great reminder that we shouldn't wait until there's a crisis to start undoing bad laws. All right, that is it for what the left and the right are saying, which brings us to Our Take. Just as a reminder, Isaac is out of the country this week, so Our Take is written collaboratively by the entire Tangle editorial staff. Isaac did contribute as both an editor and a writer this week as well. So, in most ways, this shouldn't be political. It was a freak accident. Obviously, the most important thing at moments like this is searching for those missing and caring for the grieving families of the dead. And thankfully, the response from commentators on this issue has been pretty apolitical. At Tangle, we've all been heartened to see the agreement that this disaster was not the result of a crew acting irresponsibly. Rather, the disaster was curtailed by an urgent response to prevent the loss of even more lives. We're glad to see the agreement from across the political aisle that the concerted actions of the ship's crew with harbor workers and law enforcement should be applauded, and that the government needs to come together now to ensure a timely rebuild. Depending on which side of the aisle you're on, it's probably tempting to bring the focus to one element of the story or another. The immigrant workers who lost their lives on the bridge, the vulnerability of key points in our supply chain, or the possible upgrades to some of our nation's infrastructure. Each of those elements is definitely at play here, but it's important to keep the story in perspective. DEI did not destroy the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Neither did capitalism. Neither did Joe Biden. A total lack of infrastructure investment or an overfocus in infrastructure development. As shipping expert Salvatore R. Mercurgliano wrote, this was a black swan event, something that is incredibly rare, but inevitable in hindsight. While major events like the vessel Ever Given clogging the Suez Canal or Houthi rebels attacking ships in the Red Sea remain prominent in memory, the main story of the last 50 or so years of world trade is that shipping large freight, a risky endeavor by its nature, has been getting increasingly safer with time. 30 years ago, the world was losing 200 ships a year. Only 38 succumbed in 2022, Mercurgliano said. We know it's hard to say that while images of cargo ships clogging shipping lanes are fresh in our minds, but it's true. Stories like this feel so powerful because they are so rare, and because they show how fragile our global trade systems can be. A power failure on one ship at the wrong time can cost lives and billions of dollars. Imagine what could happen to the global economy if the English Channel or the Malacca Strait became impassable for an extended period of time. As we rebuild and recover, questions of increasing resiliency will be front and center. Yes, many aspects of our nation's infrastructure should be improved, but we also need to increase the resiliency of other vital infrastructure that doesn't appear to require immediate attention, as in the case of the Key Bridge. And when it comes to rebuilding, the best recent analogy isn't any of those shipping incidents we already listed, but the collapse of the bridge carrying I-95 outside of Philadelphia last year after a tanker caught fire beneath the highway. As the Washington Post editorial board wrote under what the left is saying, Pennsylvania officials initially estimated the bridge would take months to repair, causing massive disruptions to travel along one of the busiest parts of one of our nation's busiest highways. And yet 12 days after the collapse, the span reopened, thanks to a combination of emergency no-bid contracts, 24/7 repair crews, support from the federal government, and engineering ingenuity. There are, of course, major differences between the I-95 collapse and the one in Baltimore, and we're not suggesting that such a rapid recovery timeline is possible here. There's much more debris to clear from the crash site, and obviously, it's over water. But writers like Sean Kennedy had it right when he wrote that there are ways that our government can cut through red tape to get this rebuild done quickly and efficiently. Lastly, there's the question of cost, which is an area where we're more pessimistic. While some on the right have made the case that the bridge rebuild can be done without massive amounts of federal spending, there's the simple reality that a disaster of this magnitude is going to cost a lot to remedy. Already, we're seeing estimates to the bridge rebuild alone could be over $1 billion, and Biden has made no secret of his intent for the federal government to pay for it. He'll likely need congressional approval to secure the funds to do so, but the preliminary cost figures are a reminder of the huge financial toll this disaster will take. Ultimately, the bridge will need to be rebuilt. It should be rebuilt to be more resilient to future accidents, and it's a good idea to use this moment to try to find other vulnerable areas in our nation's infrastructure that can also be improved and secured. Even though this last incident was another indicator of how sensitive our trade infrastructure is, we're optimistic that the rebuild will provide another example of how resilient our economy and our people still are.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
All right, that is it for our take. We're skipping over today's reader question since we gave our main story a little bit of extra space. But if you want a question answered in the newsletter, you can simply reply to one of the daily newsletters, or you can email Isaac directly at isaac@readtangle.com. Next up is our Under the Radar story. A new survey from the Public Religion Research Institute found that one religious category in the U.S. is growing faster than all others, the religiously unaffiliated. Approximately 75% of the country still identifies with a faith tradition, but major religions, like Christianity, have seen their membership stagnate or decline over the past decade. Meanwhile, the percentage of Americans identifying as religiously unaffiliated rose from 21% to 26% between 2013 and 2023. In 2023, 47% cited negative teaching about or treatment of gay and lesbian people as an important factor in their choice to disaffiliate, up from 29% in 2016. The disaffiliation is not dispersed equally. Catholic affiliation has declined significantly, while white evangelical Protestants, Black Protestants, and Jewish Americans have retained their members at much higher levels. PRRI suggests their findings are indicative of transformational changes to the U.S.'s religious landscape that could decide elections in 2024 and beyond. PRRI has the story, and there's a link in today's episode description. All right, next up is our numbers section. The approximate number of cargo containers that passed through the Port of Baltimore in 2023, comprising 2.8% of container volume shipped through East Coast ports, is 1 million. The Port of Baltimore's rank among U.S. ports for total tonnage of cargo handled each year is 17. the number of major bridge collapses worldwide due to ship or barge collisions between 1960 and 2015 is 35. The time between the Dolly's impact with the Francis Scott Key Bridge and the bridge's collapse was less than 1 minute. On a scale of 0 to 9, the Francis Scott Key Bridge's rating during the last federal inspection in 2023 was 5, one step above being deemed in poor condition and one below satisfactory condition. The weight of the Dolly when it left the Port of Baltimore on March 26th was 112,383 metric tons. The percentage of U.S. international trade value accounted for by maritime vessels, according to a 2021 report from the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, is 40%, and the percentage of U.S. GDP accounted for by goods carried by maritime vessels in 2020 is 18%. All right, and last but not least, our Have a Nice Day story. Cement, the key ingredient in concrete, is the source of 8% of the world's emissions of carbon dioxide. Concrete is ubiquitous for good reason. Its low cost and high durability make it important material for building roads, bridges, and large buildings. Over the past decade, researchers at UCLA's Institute for Carbon Management have been working on reducing the environmental harm from concrete. A startup based on their work, Concrete AI, now says that field tests using its AI-driven software reduce emissions by 30% and also cut costs by more than $5 per cubic yard. At some point, we have to decide, do we want to build new things and repair the infrastructure that we have, said Concrete AI founder Mathayu Baki. And if we want that, we have to continue to work with cement and figure out how to use it more efficiently. Forbes has this story, and there's a link in today's episode description. All right, everybody, that's it for today's podcast. As always, if you want to support our work, you can head over to retangle.com and sign up for a membership. Don't forget, we are down to our final VIP tickets for our live event happening at City Winery on April 17th. Please head to the link in the episode description and pick up your tickets while you can. We'll be back here tomorrow. Until then, have a good one. Peace.
Our podcast is written by me, Isaac Saul, and edited and engineered by John Wall. The script is edited by our managing editor, Ari Weitzman, Will Kaback, Bailey Saul, and Sean Brady. The logo for our podcast was designed by Magdalena Bakova, who is also our social media manager. Music for the podcast was produced by Diet 75. And if you're looking for more from Tangle, please go to readtangle.com and check out our website.